Welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Summer is quickly coming to an end, and although the next several months will test each and every one of us, regardless of your location, I feel the one constant will be this podcast. I would like to thank the following supporters for their continuous support. Suzanne Holland, Spunky Cheek, Leah Mitchell, Laura Solarin, Kim and Jack Lair, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, Christopher Hassler, Matt Mercier, Peyton England, Stacy Keller, Aaron Wortman, Angela Bowen, N. Quinn, Dottie Cashin, Dean Butler, Gerald Lang, Ginny Comer, Jeannie Schneider Mitchell, Jeff Griffin, Laura Furman, Megan Parker, Melissa Gilbert, The No Agenda Podcast, Rebecca Harris, Sherry Benner, Susan King, Teresa Trapp, Valerie Williams, Rebecca Frederick, Jill Stellman, Whitney, Brian S., Bobby Young, Brenda Worsley, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten.tv podcast, Don Roberts, and Max Duration. Thank you again for your support, and I look forward to making many, many more episodes. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you're living in 1863, Walnut Grove was a place to be. If you're living in 1863, it was a common place to meet his family. I was homeless. I totally messed that up. Sorry. Hello and welcome to Walnut Grovecast. My name is Mark. And I'm going to pause this. I don't know. It's a little bit cursed this week. I'm having issues with all of my podcasts and all of my stuff. But nonetheless, we're going to get through this from this point on flawlessly. So I want to welcome to the show Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama.
Hello.
It's quite a name.
It is.
We've spoken about that in the past. I love your name. I think it's it just, I think when you say Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, you have no idea what this person is. And I love it. You know, it's just it's a perfect American name for a Canadian. So welcome to the show, Chantel. How's everything?
It is good. Hello from the Canadian prairies.
How y'all doing? Way up there north.
Way up in the north. Yeah, we're good. We're good. You know, getting through.
So you chose this episode. This is a favorite of yours, right?
It is. Yeah.
Why did you choose this episode?
Oh, there's a couple of reasons.
No, seriously, why? No, I'm kidding.
Why? There's a couple of reasons. I like baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And baseball is like a weird thing for me because I didn't really, I was a nerdy kid. Okay. I was a band kid. I didn't really play sports or anything, but I saw Eight Men Out and I really got into baseball history.
That is like the only, by the way, I hate sports. I've gone to 3 baseball games in my life and I've hated every moment of it. Well, you know what? I'm going to count this as a baseball game. No, I can't get through it. But Eight Men Out is an excellent movie.
This is
such a good movie. And I am not into sports movies at all on any level except for that and maybe Friday Night Lights, the TV series, not the movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And so Eight Men Out is like, it's an amazing historical piece. It's about labor struggles within the baseball like world at the time. And it's just got like this huge cast.
Corruption. It has John Cusack at the top of his career, in my opinion. And such good acting. Yeah. I mean, I got to revisit that movie, actually.
One of the really cool things is that when John Sayles casted the movie, he casted he casted actors who were actually like good at sports.
Oh.
And were like, so D.B. Sweeney had actually played either double or triple A ball. Like he was like he'd played like actual like hardcore, maybe going to the MLB,
yeah.
MBL, Major Baseball League, MBL.
I don't know.
yeah. Okay. Anyways.
But you know what? I do want to just add, I used to collect baseball cards, but it was purely as an investment in the mid 80s. And I had no idea what I was collecting. And I remember in the mid 90s, I sold it all. So.
Did you get any return on your investment?
Oh, yeah. At that period of time, I was buying a lot of very old cards. And I realized these little pieces of paper are worth quite a bit. I was already collecting comic books for quite some years. And I just thought, you know what? This is kind of, you know, I could pick this up pretty cheap. It seems to be on up and up and up. So in the mid 90s, I unloaded a bunch of it. And I don't know. I can't get into it for some reason. I've tried. And I just, for whatever reason, I just can't get into baseball. Especially Little League. I can't get into it.
I think our problem, see, in Canada, of course, like, hockey is the thing, right?
That's Little League for you, you know?
Yeah. And putting your kid in hockey, like, there's no, my feeling, I mean, I may get other Canadians coming at me like, oh, shut up, you're stupid, whatever. But my feeling, my kid's not really into sports anyways. He's kind of like me. So, but like Little League is so competitive. It's like, you're 4 years old. Let's start planning your NHL career. You know, like it's just gotten so hyper competitive and crazy. And, you know,
oddly enough, I think that it is hockey is the only sport that I can, I'm going to put quotes around, tolerate. I enjoy going to hockey games, or at least I used to. They were a lot more aggressive back in those, in you know, maybe the early 2000s. And you really haven't lived life until you have attended an Islanders-Rangers game.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's going to be great.
Yeah, and for people who might not know, the Islanders are the Long Island, you know, hockey team, which does relatively well. I'm not sure what they still do. And the Rangers.
Rangers are one of the original six, too, in the NHL. They're an old school team.
And that's a New York team. So you're getting New York and Long Island, and it's like a head-to-head thing, and you're just like, we hate you. And it's wonderful.
I live in Alberta, and we have two hockey teams. We've got the Calgary Flames, and I live in Calgary, and we've got the Edmonton Oilers.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two big cities in Alberta. And those teams came in the 1980s. And of course, the Edmonton Oilers back in the 80s was Wayne Gretzky, Grant Messier, Paul Coffey, all these big players. And they got the cup and it was huge. My mom's from Edmonton. So like there was this, and Red Deer, where I grew up, is like equidistant between the two big cities. And so the bars at the time would have like a red line and a blue line down the middle of the bar, and all the Oilers fans would be on one side and all the Flames fans would be on the other. So
that's really taking it to the next level.
It's called the Battle of Alberta. And in the 80s and a little bit in the 90s, it was
now,
huge.
You know, I don't know if you've seen Matt Mercier posting on Walnut Grove cast, but he's also a Canadian. I just want to point that out.
Okay, that's cool.
I knew somebody was a Canadian. I'm like, wait a minute, Matt's a Canadian. So if Matt's listening, how you doing, Matt? But yeah, I say we jump into this. We get some weird music in this episode. I do want to mention, do you want to mention the episode? Because I don't think we mentioned it yet.
Sure. Yeah, no. So the beginning is an episode where Walnut Grove plays a yearly game against, who's it against? Which town? I can't remember.
Oh, it's Sleepy Eye.
Sleepy Eye.
Yeah.
So they play, but Sleepy Eye has a way more, like they have a team that, not professional, but they're like a really serious team.
Yeah, a little too serious.
They're like super serious. And Walnut Grove is just like the cast of all the men sort of playing ball. And they always want to win, but they always lose. And there's just, it's a great comedy episode. And it's not, I wouldn't say it's like cheesy comedy, like maybe The Legend of Black Jake is, which is a great episode. But
this falls into, though, in my opinion, a bit of a filler episode. There's really no reason for this episode to be in as a part of the Little House on the Prairie universe.
You know, no, it's just a fun, like, baseball episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's definitely good, and it touches upon the old-time playing. But it's called the In the Beginning, which is a nice little pun. It first aired on October 1st, 1975. And, you know, like you said, it's a light episode. And there's a lot of ribbing, which I think is fun to see.
And we get to see some good comedy chops from a lot of the different actors. I mean, I think the actor who plays Lars, he has some great lines.
Yeah.
Carolyn has some, like, really great zingers. There's just some really good, I think, comedy. I mean, see, I think it's a funny episode.
I went a different route with this episode, but we'll get into it.
Okay.
I found Caroline to be a very high, you know, holy roller in this episode. And I was like, whoa, the writing has really changed over time. But here's the weird music. This just basically sets us up for what kind of episode we can prepare ourselves for. We don't hear this kind of music on Little House.
No, this is very, you got the drum set in the background, and it's very 70s. You can tell immediately. If you listen to that music, it'd be like, this show's in the 70s.
Yeah, absolutely. You could see that same music being used in a Brady Bunch intro. It's just really kind of, it's lighthearted, I guess is really the best way to describe it. So here we go. We have Pa making a baseball bet, and we've never seen him have any interest whatsoever in any sport outside of what? Boxing and arm wrestling? I'm not really.
Maybe. I guess. Wood chopping? Is that?
I guess, you know, in the sticks, it's a bit of a sport. But here we go. We got to set this up.
Hi, Pa.
Hi, Half Pint.
How's it going?
It's almost finished. Where's your sister?
She'll be late. He's helping Mrs. Whipple.
But he's sanding this thing on some type of contraption.
It's a lathe.
But this, I mean, I've never seen a lathe like this. I own a lathe. I mean, it should have a counterweight and it should be constantly spinning.
Sure.
He's pedaling this thing. I don't know. This thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, how do you, I don't know.
Yeah, this is a weird contraption. I'm not doubting its authenticity. I just feel it was not a very good device.
I feel like maybe the bat looks too good to be made on it.
For somebody who makes furniture, he should have a really good lathe. You know, if he's making like chairs and repairing them, and I don't know, I just think I question the tools on Little House sometimes.
Do you know what I always think of when I see him making that bat? Is I think of Homer making Wonder Bat in the baseball episode of The Simpsons back in the 90s.
I'm sure it's funny. I've only seen maybe 3 episodes of The Simpsons.
Oh, okay, yeah. The Wonder Bat, and I actually I play slow pitch. And I, because
is that
I
softball to, or
slow pitch? Yeah, it's like soft pitch, but it's like really dumbed down. It's like what old people who play sports play, like me. And no, it's not just old, but like for someone who didn't start playing until I was 43 years old. Like it's nice.
You're just
and,
going out there to play some baseball.
Exactly. Right. It's baby town Frollies. It's great. And because I have to be this person, I'm always out there in my Rockford Peaches uniform. So I got a wooden bat to go with my whole look. And, my husband teases me that it's my Wonder Bat because it's wooden.
I have to look it up. I mean, eventually I'll get into The Simpsons. I know it's on Disney Plus and my son is watching it. So I'll jump into it at some point. Now we do get to meet Margaret and Jebediah. Margaret and Jebediah, I do want to just preface, neither one dies in this episode. So no, you don't have to really be worried for their safety, even though we never see them again.
There are no red shirts in this episode.
Right, exactly. So they're on the farm, and even they're kind of ribbing each other a little bit. They seem to be a sweet couple, and the Ingalls are coming to swing by and say hi.
I feel like the age is weird between the two of them.
I don't know. I'm freeze-framed on it now. I feel like they're the same age, but I know what you're talking about. It seems like the age is a little bit off. Sometimes I think they look fine. I don't know. But here's the clip between them.
Good morning.
Hi.
Morning, Charles.
Hi. Laura.
Morning.
Good morning.
Oh, didn't expect to get Margaret Walker back till next week.
By the way, that was the long... Some of these scenes are so long for no reason. This is such a visual episode. I said before we started recording that we're going to have to really describe what's going on, because a lot of it's just... Like, that whole scene I just played is really just Charles pulling up, and you hear Laura saying, good morning, like a parrot. But here we go. He's returning a chair, and that's why I bring up the repairing of a chair. And, yeah, that's what Charles does. He fixes things. He's always making money.
Yeah, the work went a lot faster than I thought. Half by now we're going in town to baseball practice, so we drive it by.
Well, bring it in the house. I'll give you a cup of coffee.
Oh, right. Sure, I'm obliged.
Can I get a drink of water?
Sure, honey. You know where the well is. Oh, my goodness, Charles. That rocker hasn't looked that good since it was new.
That's a good one. Linseed oil, some beeswax, came right back.
So it's always fun when I hear them just kind of talking about this old 19th century type talk. Stuff that's kind of, you know, true to form, too. You know, it's not really anything. I guess we would do the same thing. I use linseed oil on my guitars and stuff like that. Now, Laura sees a chicken hawk, which I'm not really sure what a chicken hawk is, except that's a hawk that possibly attacks chickens.
Yeah, well, I mean, hawks, any kind of hawk will check, like, if they're hungry, will go for another bird, I think.
So Laura calls out this chicken hawk, and, of course, chicken hawk brings me back to cartoons, and I have to start rethinking the entire existence of chicken hawks. But, right? It's so weird.
Yeah.
And nobody really bats an eye that he's trying to kill the chicken hawk with rocks. But I'm going to play this scene. It's a little bit strange.
What's wrong?
There's a chicken hawk about to get one of your chickens.
He's just picking up rocks and pelting them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's farm life, right?
Like, oh, no, I'm not saying he's wrong. It's just not something we normally see on Little House.
Yeah, no. We don't see them, like, picking off gophers with their 22s, which they would for sure be doing.
Oh, yeah.
Anything that's going to, like, affect your crops or your life, and especially in those days. I mean, you weren't just farming for money. You were farming to survive through the winter, right? So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, I don't think, if anything, this is probably an accurate moment, which is something we don't see too often. I don't think it's usually the farmer, like Pa, you know, having a somber moment with his family saying, I'm gonna have to go in there and put that chicken hawk down, you know. It's not really like, it wasn't like that. So Pa sees that he's thrown his rocks and he's throwing remarkably well, so he tries to get him, he convinces him to come out and play baseball for them. And we haven't really developed that whole thing yet. We come into town. We see Doc wearing I'm going to say 1860s, 1870s accurate baseball outfit, right?
But I found something out about this. Oh. I was doing a little research, and apparently baseball was really only played in, like, gentlemen's clubs. Hmm. So when he says it's his college uniform, he wouldn't have played in college.
Oh, really?
That wouldn't have been, like, a thing that, like, at his age he would have done, because it wasn't really that organized.
Hmm. Well, I know, you know, here in New York, Cooperstown is, like, the birthplace of baseball.
Right.
And it was invented in the summer of 1939. Now, we have this kind of, these reenactments here on Long Island. It's not happening this summer. But in previous summers, they would have these historical baseball games. And I don't know. I mean, they would be recreating 1860s baseball, and Long Island had leagues in the 1860s. So
sure,
it had to be somewhat formed.
But I mean, if we go with Doc Baker being like, so Kevin Hagen in this episode would have been like 46, 47 years old.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have been in college when he was 20, there wouldn't have been a college team he would have played for, because he says very specifically.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, it's, who cares? It's Little House on the Prairie. It's not. Big deal, but
I'm surprised you went to college.
for everybody who doesn't know, Doc Baker's my favorite character.
I love his
hair. I'm always having to, like, defend him to Mark, because Mark thinks he's terrible.
Well, I think I love his hair, though.
His hair is terrible.
Oh, that's my favorite part of him. It's so wispy.
I have to assume that Kevin Hagen himself liked the longer hair because he kept it that way. After, like, for the rest of his life, like, once it was sort of like appropriate for men in the 70s to have longer hair. If you see pictures of him later in life, he still had that long. I think he had naturally curly hair.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you look at his work prior to Little House on the Prairie, he always had like nice cut, like good short,
up to a point, and then he was like, I'm gonna let it grow to the 70s.
And I think there was also a certain like what the, you know, he had normal eyebrows prior to Little House on the Prairie. Mm-hmm. And then it was like any sort of character over a certain age in Little House on the Prairie, like,
get the big bushies.
They didn't like quaff them anymore. It was just like, screw it. You're an old guy. Nobody cares about your eyebrows anymore. Like, which we just don't see that. Well, maybe in British TV we do, but not so much in North American.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in general, it was a look that kind of went away pretty quickly here. But here we go. We have Doc and Edwards kind of ribbing each other a little bit, which I thought was kind of fun.
Morning, Edwards.
Morning, Doc.
Ready to play?
Oh, well, I suppose so. Let's hear what we're going to have to wear.
My old college uniform.
Oh.
What do you mean, oh?
Well, I don't know if I'd agree to play this game. I knew I had to shuck down in my long johns.
I love Edwards when he's just ribbing people.
Oh, God. And he's got some great, he's got some great lines during the game. He's just like a great character.
Yeah, he's, this is like the epitome of a very fun Edwards and everybody, actually. I mean, I like the fact that it's not such a serious episode. And that's why I'm saying it's kind of out of place in the world of Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, it is very, but I mean, these were the days when like so many episodes were shot for a season, right? Yeah. Like the writers had to be struggling all the time. Like, okay, now let's do a baseball one. That's just easy. We can do, because that had to be an easy episode to write.
Well, it was also no pressure because it's like, you're probably just out playing,
Yeah.
There's a couple of things we'll talk about in the future, but, even the beer, like having beer in Walnut Grove. I don't know if I've ever seen beer in Walnut Grove.
Yeah, right? Like, it's pretty much a dry town, isn't it? Like, we don't ever...
I mean, aside from the stuff that they sell at the Mercantile.
Pardon me.
Yeah, it's all right. But,
I love the look that Doc gives Edwards in this interaction afterwards. Just this, like, it's just a funny, like, the kind of thing you would absolutely do if someone was giving you a bad time. It's great.
And that's another thing. You know, I do recommend this episode to watch it, though, because it is such a physical episode. And the expressions are really great. Even Hansen gets in on the fun here. I'll play some of this.
Doctor, I see you brought the catcher.
Catcher?
Easiest position on the team, Edwards. Anything the pitcher throws, you catch it, you throw it right back to him. You don't even have to move.
Last time I heard about anything that easy, I wound up holding the bag on a snipe hunt.
Charles?
Hansen?
Just the man we've been waiting for.
Oh, no. I brought you the man you've been waiting for. You know Jebediah.
Yeah, you bet you. How are you, Jebediah?
Mr. Hansen?
Mr. Mumford throws a ball harder than anybody in Hero Township.
Jebediah?
I wouldn't go that far, Laura. Margaret ain't taken much with games. I never really got to throw a real baseball.
Well, let me tell you, if what he showed me is any example, we got ourselves a pitcher.
Let's see what he can do.
Put him to work. Let's bet on it. There's a lot of stuff in this episode that kind of surprised me. The betting, to begin with.
Yes.
But then it really surprised me how much of a priss Caroline is this episode. I'm going to point it out. Maybe you just thought, oh, it's just Ma being Ma, but I don't know. It started getting to me when she just started repeating so many weird things. So the bottom line is Nels and Jebediah compete to see who's better in the pitching. It's a very visual thing, but, Jebediah beats him out. Nels is considered kind of the, kind of a throwaway player, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
And sadly.
I think, of course, it's Nels. But honestly, as the episode goes, so I know for sure Kevin Hagen played baseball when he was doing his hitch with the Navy
mm-hmm.
when he was a young man, and also played in like high school and stuff. So you can tell he actually knows like how to hit a ball.
Right.
And I think from like a lot of the books I've read, like Alison Arngrim's book and Melissa Gilbert's book, they talk about how everybody like Michael Landon ran a really tight ship. And if there was a baseball game on, he was like, let's do it and get this over with, because everybody wanted to go to whatever game they were going to.
Yeah. I guess he's all like, let's get through this and get to our real life.
So I think everybody was pretty big baseball fans. And actually, Richard Bull, at one point he slides and takes a base. And it seems to me that Richard Bull probably had some skills too, because he slides like someone who knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my like sad image of what that is. But I mean, he slides head first, which I don't think a lot of people do unless they're comfortable with it. Like that can be really daunting if you don't do it all the time. So,
you know, I just looked it up. For whatever reason, I thought this was in the first season, and it made more sense to me that Ma is so religious in this episode, but I didn't realize that this character trait was still a part of her at this point. Because this goes away very, you know, relatively quickly. But this is kind of what I'm talking about. And I'm not really putting her down, because she's kind of right. It's just I'm basically criticizing the character trait.
It's hard to believe.
Well, seeing is believing, and Jebediah is the answer to Walnut Grove's prayers.
Charles, I think the Lord has more important things on his mind than baseball.
Well, maybe so, but I'll tell you this. Jebediah's fastball is heaven sent.
We're sure to win this year.
Well, now, I'm not so sure of that, but I'll tell you this. Slick McBurney never pitched as good. And not one man on our team can get a hit off of Jebediah.
What is unusual about that?
Carolyn, that's not funny.
Yeah, so she knows how to rib, too. And
I love that line. Like, I honestly, I mean, I think it doesn't really strike me as religious, more than it strikes me as like, oh my God, this stupid baseball game. Like, she's just so...
You're right. She's not interested.
I think it's more
interested.
Of like a mom thing, where she's just like, oh, for the love of, really? I can't even, you know, like, I think she's just sort of, it's kind of, I don't know.
It's like these men, they're crazy and they're inappropriate.
They're just so
and,
wrapped up about this damn sports game. Right. And I think maybe a little bit of a shout out to all the sort of like baseball, football, hockey widows out there, especially in the '70s when, I mean, I don't know. I grew up in a home where the women were all sports fans and the men weren't. So like my grandfathers didn't really care, but my grandmother on my dad's side was like a huge Montreal Canadiens fan. And then my mom is like, and even when I started getting into baseball, I was up a couple of years ago visiting my mom and I was like, hey, I'm going to put the game on. Right. And she's like, oh, I'm not really into baseball. And then like 2 seconds into it, she was yelling at the ref for like doing something wrong.
Right. Yeah, so I never got into any of this stuff.
My husband's not a big ball guy. My dad's not a big sports fan. Like, and so I think it's kind of that shout out to, you know, it's a little gender stereotypical, but I think it was pretty fair.
But it's also good to see. I like the representation of baseball historically. And then, you know, they're touching upon the casual playing of it. And I think it's fun. Now, one person who's not used to this type of attention is Jebediah. Jebediah is just kind of, he's a simple guy, from what I can tell. So all of a sudden, the town's in love with Jebediah. He's their ringer.
I've been thinking, after we beat Sleepy Eye, we should try to set up games with other towns around.
Yeah, I wouldn't go too fast. We haven't beaten Sleepy Eye yet.
Oh, come now, Charles. You've seen Jebediah pitch. He's all we've ever needed.
Speaking of our pitcher...
Hey, there he is.
You take care of that arm. We're counting on you.
Gonna need it a week from today.
I'll be there.
His character's like, what are you talking about? I just want pie, you know?
Oh, you know what else I find is funny is that the game is on a Sunday.
Wouldn't it be? I mean,
yeah,
or is that like, I would think
they're
after
gambling
church.
On a Sunday, they're drinking.
Oh yeah. No, you're right.
It's just kind of funny. I mean, I guess, yeah, Sunday is like your, especially in the farming communities, like Sunday would definitely be your day of rest, but it definitely was a little bit more of a modern take than I think of what would have happened in an actual situation at the time.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's I think that's why they maybe pointed out the whole thing with the gambling, but definitely the drinking. That was definitely one of those things.
Yeah, there's like no mention of that at all.
No, but they have a barrel. So
they have they have like a keg. I mean, they literally just yeah. And all the other team. Like apparently Sleepy Eye. Apparently they're not so teetotaling, I guess, because those guys are like standing in the outfield with their beer.
But you know, in the 1870s, beer was just something that it was a lot more common. And I guess there were always these kind of dry towns, but I don't know. People drank a whole lot more before the Prohibition in the States, you know?
Yeah, that's true too. And I mean, in Britain, it's always been, you know, like if I have a book that's about the history of beer that a friend bought me. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting about how, you know, beer was like the drink of the working class and beer, you know, there's no, like that's, they're owed that at the end of their work week or the end of their day, they're owed to go into the pub and drink that like historically. Mm. And even during Prohibition, there was of course all these bootleggers going to the Caribbean and bringing back booze.
Yeah.
And the president at the time spoke to Churchill, who was like the minister of, oh, I can't, God, I'm just doing great today with this. but he was like minister of something. And he was like, you really got to stop this and they can't bootleg. And Churchill basically told them like, go pound sand. Like, I think it's wrong that you're doing this. This is wrong that you should deny the people of your.
Right. It's like the people's drink. And
yeah. Like it's completely wrong that you are denying people the right to go have a drink at the end of their day, regardless of class, regardless of anything. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Yeah.
Well, I think the entire Prohibition, when you look back at it and how it was implemented under the guise of the evils of man, it's a very strange, it was a very strange movement that quickly went away.
It's weird because it was the whole movement was tied very closely to like votes for women, and they were tied really closely to it. And it's like, yeah. I'm pretty sure if I'd been around, I'd been like, yeah, I want the vote, but I don't want this any part of this. And there were people who.
It was a big part of the suffrage movement, but
it was. There were like.
But it made no sense, really. There was no real correlation between suffrage and alcohol. Like, I mean, aside from men, you know, mostly it was men doing heavy drinking. And the religion got involved in all of that. There's actually a really fascinating documentary by Ken Burns just called Prohibition, which I really recommend.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, I have watched it. Yeah.
And, you know, it gives a good overview, but to get deeper into it all, you know, there are several books on the topic. And it's just a very questionable movement. There are a lot of similar movements that are kind of popping up these days, that you could probably create some level of connection to those movements. So,
yeah, like I'm not big on movements that want to ban something because morally, I don't, you know, if you want to go drink, go drink. If you want to go do drugs, go do drugs. I mean, there's always going to be like rules that you can't drive your car when you're messed up and you shouldn't, right? That makes sense.
I'm not judging anyone.
Like if you kill someone, that's a bad thing. But you know what I mean? Like,
no, well, there's common sense laws, and then there's ones that are a little heavy handed.
Or even like, this is great for a Little House in the Prairie podcast, but like even prostitution, like
there's prostitution in Little House.
There's a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, at what point do we regulate? And, you know, that's where the big questions come in. At what point is the government responsible for the actions or inactions or the ruling of the people who are part of it? And that's the big stinker right there. But back to Walnut Grove, where I don't think they had any hookers in Walnut Grove.
They might have with that baseball team, though. Those guys seem like...
Actually, if you look closely, you see Kezia in the background. It's kind of wandering. She's walking around with a beer. All right, so here they go. We get our scene in bed, one of two.
Mulligans?
Whoops.
What's so funny?
Oh,
I just started thinking a minute about Olson and Hanson and Doc Baker at church today.
He's chewing something in bed. What could he be chewing in bed?
Tobacco?
Laying down, chewing tobacco?
Yeah.
Were you spitting it in Caroline's, you know, nightgown?
Gross.
It's just weird. Like, he's chewing something. But I can't imagine there being anything that's chewable. Anyway.
What about them?
Well, they were all arguing about what name to pick for the team. Even the Reverend Olin came up with a name. The Walnut Grove Heavenly Hosts. By the time you finish sewing all those letters on my shirt, the game would be over.
I'm surprised at the Reverend Alden coming up with a name like that. It seems sacrilegious.
Again, with the, you know. But she does have a little zinger. You know, maybe that's her thing. She likes to be high and holy, and then she has a zinger.
Not if we win.
Oh. It's her, actually his zinger. She just agrees. She thinks it's so funny.
It's funny. Yeah, I think maybe that's just how she's... Like, she wants to be snippy, but she kind of has to do, like, penance before she's snippy. Like,
yeah, I don't
it's
know.
It's like preemptive confession.
I think the Caroline we see here is not the Caroline that we end up with. That's
no,
all.
I think, well, I mean, it's...
We
it's
have Caroline who will, you know, will punch a woman, she'll throw food in the face of people, and, you know, she's a wild woman. She's not so prissy.
I like the fact that Caroline, you know, when I rewatched the series... Because what I did is I realized that I'd never seen it like from start to finish. I'd always seen it on reruns in the 80s when I was like younger. And so I kind of wanted to see it like the whole arc. Right. And I realized like the female characters in Little House on the Prairie are great, from the little girls to the grown women. They're amazing, like, characters. They're great, fully developed, like, you know, even Nellie, like Nellie.
Yeah, they're
was
well
like
developed.
They're well developed, and they're an odd. You know, they're Carolyn has a problem with her temper, and that's great. Like she should. That's a normal, like, you know, like she acts like a normal mom to me. She sometimes loses her temper, and she sometimes, you know, like there's, and I think there was, you know, and Harriet has her softer moments, and but you know she's like a strong woman, like, and I think that you know it was really pretty impressive that that's what these characters were like. Well, and watching it all, it gave me this great, I'm like, oh my God, this is why I got into so many fist fights in school. Look at, I'm like, I totally was like, you know, Laura and Nellie. And I was like, looking at these young girl characters who didn't even, God, even,
yeah, the female characters in Little House are very, very, they're strong women. Very rarely do we get, a woman who's victimized. And when we do, it's really, it's pointed out. It's to see the error of the ways and how far we've come as a society,
right,
in most cases.
And I think they were great role models. And I mean, I think it was also a great nod to the women who were like functioning on the prairies, because the prairies are, it's harsh, right? It's there's dozens of stories, hundreds of stories out for the prairies where I live too, of like, you couldn't be soft and move out to homestead. Like, well, you just couldn't.
And when you worked hard, you made money. So when you see an opportunity to make money, well, if you're a businesswoman like Harriet, your ears are always open and you're listening for ways to make money. And that kind of shows up right in front of the mercantile with Slick showing up.
Move.
Ah, yes.
The sleepy eye fellas know how sensitive some folks are about wagering on the Sabbath. So we thought the sportsmen in town might want to get their bets down a little early. Begging your pardon, ma'am.
Well, I don't know.
Well, Nels, now you said yourself that the merchants have a very good chance of winning this year.
The merchants?
Yes, that's the name of our team here. Mr. McBurney, after the mercantile.
Tis a noble name for a fine team.
It's a fool.
Sure, I don't know.
Nels, this gentleman has ridden a long way. While I normally don't favor wagering, still, I think Mr. McBurney here is offering us a chance for very good investment.
A true patron of the sport.
Won't you come inside, Mr. McBurney?
I will indeed. Harriet.
Just sweep, Nels.
Yeah, sweep, Nels.
Just sweep.
Poor Nels.
It's interesting because baseball's always kind of been steeped a little bit in I mean, I guess all sports have, but I know the history of baseball a little bit better. And Eight Men Out was all about betting and corruption. And I guess Chicago is really bad for it because I've done a lot of reading about.
It's an Chicago, understatement. Right? Yeah.
But the All-American Girls Professional League, which, of course, is what you see in the movie A League of Their Own. They weren't the only professional women's team back in the day. There were other teams, and there was actually stories of women who got, they were offered like more money to play on this like Chicago league, but then would come back, to the other league because they were constantly being asked to throw games.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it runs through, like, it's this line that sort of runs through. And then of course there was all the drug issues in the '80s. And
I never saw that movie. I never saw The League of Our Own. What year does that take place?
It takes place in 1943.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, the movie did a really good job of like taking the whole history of the league and putting it into one season for the purpose of the movie.
If you could tolerate Rosie O'Donnell, of course. The actresses that are in that movie for me are just not, if you told me that movie was supposed to take place in the '80s, I would just, okay. You know, I never got the impression that that was a period piece one either. I'm not sure. I stay away from sports and sports movies for the most part. I've seen
Rocky.
That's
one of my favorite movies.
So. Oh, I'm sorry. It's okay. I don't mean I'm sorry that it's your favorite movie.
People are allowed to have different, opinions. It was a truly feminist movie in a way that the female characters were always supporting each other in these really little, like there's all these little sort of moments throughout the story of the baseball and the league and everything.
But were they accurate is the question, was it accurate to what was going on?
It was well done. And some of I don't want to get too far into it, but like when Penny Marshall pitched the movie, she couldn't find female writers to write the movie because they didn't want to be cast as people who write women's movies. And yet it was this wildly popular movie, but there's all these great little nuggets in it of like women just supporting women in this great way. And you know, it's a great movie.
And then Kevin Costner makes something. No, I'm kidding.
Kevin Costner's not in it.
I know. I'm kidding. I'm talking about that. The movie he's in. That's also
Bull Durham.
Yes. Maybe. This is as far as I get with baseball. Basically, Slick is walking around taking bets, you know, and this is something that we don't see too often. He's also kind of a bookie, I guess.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought there was a little bit of a presumptive bet here, which I found to be kind of strange, but here we go.
What's McBurney doing around here?
Oh, the nerve of that Mrs. Olson.
Mrs. Olson?
The merchants indeed. Well, McBurney knows now that we are wagering on the Millers, not some fool woman's name.
You bet on Walnut Grove?
Yeah, on a lot more than the Olsons, Charles. I know how you feel about wagering. But, Edwards, I put down a day's pay for you.
You made a bet for me?
Yeah. It's a matter of pride.
I mean, a day's wages, that's a lot of pride, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a whole lot of pride.
I just love that. I love how I put it down for you without even
talking to you. Yeah.
And it's just weird, like, you know, Charles, I know how you feel about betting, and, I don't know, I don't get the impression that Charles has that much of an issue.
I think it's more that Caroline would be annoyed with him.
It's the women, yeah. You know, the women have a certain, the women of Walnut Grove basically keep the men in line, I think, and this is the one day of the year, maybe one or two days of the year, where they let the men act like boys, and...
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. And I respect that. I like that. And they're acting like boys, which
is fun. Well, and to be fair, like, I mean, every man on Walnut Grove and every woman has to work extremely hard all the time.
Yeah.
Even Harriet and Nels. I mean, like, yeah, Harriet's a Karen and we all know she is. But, you know, really, I mean, she's for sure, right? She absolutely wants to speak to the manager all the time.
Yeah.
But she, you know, when she says things like, we have to pay for this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like to stock our store with it. So it's very hard for us to give credit. She's not being a bitch. There's a nicer way to put it than the way she does it. But, you know, she and Nels are probably living on some pretty slim margins themselves, even though, you know, she has a way of presenting herself. But
oh, I don't think you know the Olsons very well. I'm just kidding.
But
that's something that would never come out.
You know, like, I think it's that they, yeah, you'd never know that. But I mean, they're running a business in the middle of nowhere, essentially.
Right.
Right. So even though they've got a lot of, they've got people that come in and buy, but all the people that buy from them don't have any money either. Like, right.
Right. It's it's a system, of course. It's, you need your feed, you need all of this stuff. You come to this one place and the prices have to be right.
So the thought that the men can kind of like take this day and just be crazy, like be boys, like you said, is good because they don't get that very often.
Well, speaking of being a Karen Grassley, as Caroline pulls up to the mercantile and she's going to go in there and she's going to complain about prices, about how buying of eggs is too little.
4 dozen even. My, your hens appear to be laying very well indeed, Mrs. Ingalls.
They have to with the price of eggs as low as it is.
Oh, snap.
Ah, good morning, Margaret.
Morning.
Carolyn, I just love the work Charles did on my rocker. You must be so proud of him.
Yes, I am. But you must be equally proud of Jebediah. Charles tells me he's going to make all of Walnut Grove proud on Sunday.
Not to mention a good deal richer. That is, for those of us who had the courage to back our confidence with our money.
Now, if Harriet
just
shut
up.
Yeah. No, she may not have learned until the day of the baseball game.
I don't understand.
Sorry.
Or at all. Because that all would have gone on, like, she wouldn't have known at all if Harriet hadn't said anything. It just would have gone on behind closed doors and nobody would have been the wiser.
But she lit the firecracker.
But I isn't playing for money.
No, I'm speaking of the wagers. It's as good as money in the bank, thanks to your husband.
Cha-ching.
You mean people are betting because Jebediah is pitching?
Well, Walnut Grove has a good chance of winning with Jebediah pitching.
Then I'm afraid they'll have to lose.
I can't wait to see that slick McBurney's face when Jebediah... What did you just say?
I will not allow Jebediah to take part in any game that encourages gambling.
But the bets have already been made.
Sad lesson. Jebediah will not be part of it.
Now, Margaret, you know I feel the same way about gambling that you do.
And that's the Caroline we all love.
Yeah.
The look, come on, let's be real here. Let's grow up a little bit.
Well, I think Caroline is very she's pragmatic, right?
Yes.
Like she kind of has to be with Charles for a husband. I mean, you know.
Yeah, he's always making cracks about going to church wearing his dirty clothes, and
he's also a dreamer, right? Like she has to be the practical one because Charles is the one who's kind of always off in these flights of fancy.
Always saying, "I'm going to get to finishing that wall by Carrie's bed." Did not happen.
I'm glad someone does.
Margaret, you don't understand. I myself
Harriet Olsen, it's you who doesn't understand.
If you look at Karen Grass, she gives the actress, I don't know what her name is, like this look of like, is she really yelling right now? I like the fact that this woman gets very heated, but it was one of those kind of like, hey, she's actually, you know, yelling.
Jebediah will not play. I will not allow it. Please credit the eggs to my account. I have to speak to my husband.
Oh, boy. I have to go tell my husband. No.
No playing for you.
Oh, my God. It's like, no, he can't come out and play.
Yeah, kinda.
Oh, my God. So here we are at the mercantile. It's all people talk about. And I love the fact it's kind of like a county fair. Everybody's excited. Everybody's a part of it. And when Edwards was playing catcher, he caught the ball and hurt his hand. So he's making some type of finagled catcher's mitt type of thing out of a sack. And they seem slightly impressed.
Morning, Jebediah. Wish it was.
What's the matter?
I'd rather take a beating than say what I've got to say. I ain't going to be able to pitch Sunday.
I'm sorry, Jebediah. When did you turn 9?
Right? Like, he sounds like the little kid, you know, the little, you can see the little cartoon of the kid in overalls with his hands stuffed in his pockets and his one foot twisted.
Like, it's like an arguing comedy all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Why? What'd you hurt yourself?
No, Margaret won't let me play.
My mom said
why
no.
Not?
Well, your wife Carolyn and Mrs. Olson told about that gambling.
She told on me. The whole thing, I love this character. I love him so much. But it really reminds me of like an Our Gang comedy skit right here.
She's plumb set against those things.
There must be something we can do. Maybe if I just go over there and have a little talk with her.
Well, you're welcome to try.
Jebediah?
Now, if you look closely, when he says that he'll go over there and talk to her, he starts unbuttoning his shirt.
No, does he really?
No, no, no. But you know that would be coming, right? It's like, let me just unbutton this and go talk to his wife. Oh, Charlie.
Come along.
On second thought, you're probably right. Wouldn't do any good.
Sorry, fellas. Didn't mean to let you down.
Understand.
You know, they're all like, he sucks.
We're gonna beat him up. I think they feel bad for him because he's so, you know, whipped, right? Like...
Yeah.
Poor guy not allowed to come out and play. I mean, that's just tragic.
But you know what? It's one of these things where I'm not going to say he's completely whipped. Because if we're going to look at it from an historical viewpoint, her morals are keeping her family straight and narrow. So
correct.
It's important to her to, you know, practice what she preaches. But like most good things in America, there are loopholes. And I believe this is one of such loopholes that I found to be very interesting. And I think this is a loophole that you will find being used today.
The floor is now open. Carolyn?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, this is like a village meeting.
Yeah, it's the Women's League, isn't it? Like the Women's Church League, whatever it's called.
And that's why Reverend Holden is there. I don't know why he's even in the room.
I know that many of you feel that this game with Sleepy Eye tomorrow is not a good thing for the community.
Gambling is an abomination for any community.
You'll get your turn. You know, it's like, don't just start talking. I'm talking right now. Don't be rude. And this one woman has her total Quaker bonnet.
Yes. There's a lot of bonnet variation. And I've noticed that, too, when I've watched that episode.
Very strange.
Profits no one but the devil. Don't you agree, Reverend?
Well, naturally,
I'm sorry, what did you say? Yeah, I wasn't listening at all.
I love it. I love his reaction to this. It's so...
Yeah. Well, maybe this is a little bit of the man coming out. Kind of like, let the boys have fun.
Yeah, right? Like, you know, he's a guy, too. He likes the whole spectacle of it, too, right? Like, just because someone is, like, we saw this in, like, religious characters a lot in the 70s, like Father Mulcahy on MASH. Like, just because someone is a religious person doesn't mean they're not a real human being, too, right? Like, just because you're a clergy doesn't mean you're not, you have, you know, there's things you like and there's things you do.
Right, like, nothing exciting happens in this town and we have a baseball game and you're ruining it. Lady.
Kinda, yeah.
I agree that normally that is the case.
That's the case. Normally, see, like, normally it's the devil, but in this case, I don't know. Well, it's like, what's different here, Reverend?
But, well, out of hand, I just wouldn't want to condemn anything on...
Reverend, suppose the winnings were donated to the church fund. Wouldn't that put an entirely different light on the matter of the wagers?
Well, yes, certainly.
May I remind you that that's our money you're speaking about?
May I remind you, you will lose it if Jebediah doesn't pitch. A half a loaf is better than none.
Half a loaf? So, I don't know. Is the half, which is the half that you get back?
Well, I don't know. Then they get, like, nice things for the church fund. New curtains, wasn't that voted down? Because they were too expensive at the mercantile?
Yeah. Jeez.
It's a good compromise. It leaves everybody unhappy.
Right? I think it's a great compromise. And of course, you know, Reverend's like, oh, you mean I can get that, you know, a new Bible.
Listen, Margaret,
I feel that everybody would contribute their winnings if you would allow Jebediah to pitch.
It's
no different than the turkey raffle. We hold turkey raffles for the church fund, don't we?
Well...
Reverend?
Oh, my yes. You know, the Lord seems to be most charitable in matters like this when it's for a good cause. And the church fund is a very fine cause.
So it's the loophole. She agrees.
Well,
and
if the rest of you agree, I won't stand in the way.
You were supposed to pause. Did not pause. So she agrees, and they move on, and let's see. So the game is on, which is great. Everybody's excited again. Jebediah is the star of Walnut Grove again.
Oh, and I love it when they do these big, like, sort of, like, event-type episodes, because they always have this, like, brass band playing, and it's so great.
Yeah, here's, I think this is a clip of the music. And this is exactly what it looks like when they do the reenactment here on Long Island. And it's called Old Bethpage Village here. And, you know, it's the same type of thing. And you get the reenactors who have, like, the handlebar mustache. And just like Slick. They don't hold beers. That's one thing they left out of the whole thing. Now, we're going to probably, for the most part, have to explain what's going on. Because a lot of it's just cheering and... you're out, and it's just, it's not exactly amazing fodder for discussion. So, there immediately, you have Jebediah out there, he's throwing pitches, and people are out, and they're like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? And they're just kind of curious. And in the middle, I don't know why Nels would choose, after the game has already kind of begun, to hand, actually, did he? No, he didn't. This is right before the game. He's going to hand out baseball hats with an M on each one. Or, well, he'll explain.
Well, gentlemen, Harriet, Mrs. Olson, thought it would be appropriate that since we are a team, that we might be inspired if we looked like a team.
Oh.
She wants each one of you to have one of these caps.
Well, thank you, Nels.
At cost.
Oh, what's the M for, Nels?
Merchants.
Millers!
I still think Mulligan's a good
M will stand for...
So this is like a whole thing. People have signs that says, go Millers, go Merchants. They just need to be the M's. You know, it's kind of hilarious that they're fighting over such a silly thing. But I do like the fact that it all starts with the same letter. So
yeah,
they can at least compromise, yeah, and say that the M is either this or that, which is always fun. I'll play real quick the first out where they get a little bit of a surprise, where they have their sleeper player kind of coming out.
Mr. Mumford, strike him out! Strike him out!
Oh, sir, I do believe you are up.
Next batter!
Where'd they get him from?
I don't know.
So they're like, oh, this is not going to be an easy one. They're not just a bunch of Nelses.
Yeah.
Edwards goes up, and this guy Slick is kind of a dirty player, right?
Yeah, the whole team's a bit dirty, right? Like they.
Yeah, they're doing anything to win. There's a lot of money on the table that they got. I love the way Slick pitches. The you know, the wind
oh, the windmill up. The windmill pitch, yeah.
Does that work? Like, I don't...
yeah, actually, in the... That was one of the ways, the techniques that the pitchers in the All-American Girls Professional League pitched, was the windmill pitch.
Oh, really? I'm going to imagine they kind of stopped doing it, because it looks like it would basically destroy your rotator cuff eventually.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody, like, and I don't know, I never played softball or anything as a kid, so maybe mm-hmm. they still use it, but you know, someone out there can school me on that, but I do know historically it was actually a pitch that was used. Mm. And yeah,
so the game is going on, and every, you know, it seems like a fair game up to certain points. Edwards is up, and he hits the ball, and we get a really fun version of Old Man Tucker. So I'm going to play that. I'm going to guess we never hear that version of Old Man Tucker again.
Probably not.
A lot of this music, I think, was a real one-trick pony. But I love it. I love how it's also really modern, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's less Dixieland and more it's bright. It's something we don't normally get on Little House on the Prairie.
It's just this fun, like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of modern, like, you know, this is the high school marching band is out playing this rah-rah music, right?
Right. So we see Slick, and I don't know if you know the name of this. This looks like a spitball type of cheat from what I've read, but I've never seen where you soak the entire ball in water. And
yeah.
You do, I don't know what that would do aside from make the ball extremely heavy when it's hit.
I think, yeah, I'm not sure. I would have to look stuff like that up.
Now, Charles, he does. He soaks it in water while he's taking a sip, which causes, I'm going to play this scene real quick. It causes Charles to break his bat. I mean, because, you know, come on, who else is going to break a bat on the show?
Right.
I guess, you know what, I would expect Isaiah to break his bat, but no, Charles.
Hey, what happened?
Hey, take a look at that ball.
Let me see.
Perspiration.
Sorry, Charles, you're out.
Now, although he swaps the ball must weigh a ton. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, but I don't know, the Reverend can't determine that he was cheating. He says it was perspiration, a lot of sweat.
Well, I mean, the Reverend's in a bad place, right? Because he's from the town that, he's got to be fair. If he's not, they're going to call him on it, right?
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's why they should have somebody, another third party.
Should get that priest that came in for, you know, that Irish woman the one time.
Or the guy who's going to fire Reverend Alden. It's like, you got
Oh, maybe that guy. Yeah,
that guy. You want somebody who's, you know, really up there. But so the game starts getting a little bit more involved and a little bit more intense. The batter goes to bunt, and I forgot the name of bunting. And Jebediah's pitching and basically tackles Jebediah. So Jebediah is kind of somebody who's never been into sports. All of a sudden, you know, just because he's throwing rocks at birds, he's all of a sudden the star player. It was very strange. Then for whatever reason, somebody hits the ball and there's all of a sudden like three or four balls involved in the game.
Oh yeah, they put them between
I didn't really understand that. That should have
I don't
been a foul
understand.
Or...
Yeah, I don't understand how that was like. It wasn't like, okay, stop, because there's no way there'd be those extra balls.
Yeah, so it
was unless like, someone was doing something hinky.
Right. So I'm thinking everybody's a little drunk right now. And they're like, well, we're not gonna close, we're not gonna stop the game, are we?
At one point, there's a couple of great little scenes in there where at one point Isaiah gets like the pitcher hits him. Deliberately.
Yeah. Everything that's dirty and bad, this guy Slick is doing.
And Isaiah comes back with, if you do that again, I'm going to come out there and stand on your eyelids, which I really like. That was like a great taunt.
Yeah.
And then there's another, Doc hits the ball and gets to base, but just gets creamed like hardcore.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, rough play. You know, that's the thing. A lot of...
And Charles kind of goes to help him up and then is like, you can tell that Doc wants to pick a fight, like, real bad. And Charles kind of... There's a couple of scenes throughout the series where you kind of get... Because Kevin Hagen played the heavy in a lot of Westerns throughout his career.
He's a pretty big guy. You know, he's not...
I think he was like 6'2", and he's got pretty broad shoulders and stuff. And he often played like the heavy. And I think there's a couple of... scenes in Little House on the Prairie that's alluded to, that you wouldn't want to get Doc too mad.
In general, I do give him a hard time because, you know, he has a lot of deaths under his belt. But I love him as an actor. I think that his character is invaluable to the Little House on the Prairie universe.
Oh, yeah.
So we get a little Laura and Mary action. They're keeping score.
Sure would hate to see us lose. At least it's not as bad as last year.
Well, the game isn't over yet.
It's the last inning.
Well, Pa says to never give up. You gotta cheer harder.
Come on, Walnut Grove!
So, it's just so funny. I think this.
That there's this great thing between Laura and Mary, that Mary is very like Caroline. She's very pragmatic. She's sort of a realist.
Yes.
And Laura's like her dad.
I never really made that correlation. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, Laura's like her dad. You know, she's kind of a dreamer. She wants more out of life. She's always, you know, she's a little bit more emotional. She's a little bit more on edge about things. Mm-hmm. I think that great relationship was one of the things I loved as a kid, because that was like, I was like an only child and I was a daddy's girl. And I think I really felt that, you know, that I understood that Laura was like the tomboy and she wanted to be like the boy. She wanted to be like her dad. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Like, I love that whole thing throughout the series that, you know, Laura's like her dad.
And they also,
and
she wants
to be like him.
They didn't sacrifice the relationship of Mary and Charles in lieu of Laura and Charles, you know?
So it's
something that you don't see on television very much. It was where each character has an individual well-developed relationship with each other. It's something you just don't get on television.
I think it's the heart of the series and why it was so popular, is that it was those good feelings about, you know, maybe the world can be a better place. I mean, I think we all know we're watching it and it's idealistic and it was never really like that, but it's this great feeling you get when you watch it, that this is, you know, that we are capable of this on some level, maybe not all the time, but there's this great sort of feeling that, you know, families can be close like this and families can pull together and make things happen.
And I think that's maybe why so many people, including us, we buy into the craziness of the Little House on the Prairie universe. But I think that same thing applies to every character. Each one interacts with each other in such unique ways. There's nothing, I'm going to say for the most part, for the base characters, there's nothing generic about them.
No, there really isn't.
No, you know, Jebediah, you know, all right, who cares? You know, it's like, we're never going to see him again. You know, he's in it, he's gone. But Charles is Charles in this episode all the way to the end, which is why I guess I'm pointing out how Caroline is more of a holy roller here in comparison to later on where she's working in Caroline's or Nellie's, however you want to call it.
Yeah.
So,
and I think she, you know, she develops as a character, right?
Yeah, like absolutely.
Things change for her when she's working. I mean, it's never really said, but when she's working at Nellie's, she's the major breadwinner.
Oh yeah. She even I think they allude to them being aware of that.
Yeah, like, I mean, Caroline is a working woman. And again, here, another thing is all these women on this show worked.
Yeah, at one point or another, even the ones who didn't work, worked.
Yeah, like, you had to, you know, and I mean, there was nothing easy. I mean, there's nothing easy about being a stay-at-home mom now. But back then, you had your garden to tend to. Can you imagine four kids?
No.
There's no running water.
You can stop right there. No,
I can't,
not four kids.
Right, no, because you and I have one kid, right?
Yeah. But I'm also the youngest of five. I know what it's like to have the access to that big, stupid family. And it's just something that never really worked for me. And which is why I kind of focus on my own personal small family.
I was an only child. My dad was an only child.
Yeah. It worked. It's
my husband's an only child. We're all very young. Yeah, we have a lot of demarcation in our house.
Mm-hmm. No, but I would never, if I could do it all over again, I would still have one child. I think it's simpler. It's more focused. It's definitely much more economical. And when Mike, you know, we also have tons of cousins for my son. So when he spends time with all these other characters and all these different personalities of all different age groups, he comes home a little shell-shocked and a little bit in appreciation of, wow, this is all mine. Like, I don't have to share. And it's interesting. But so we get a little bit, Nels is up, and they're like, oh, God, it's over. Nels, he's up at bat. It's basically, it's when Mark shows up, and when Mark's up at bat, and he needs to hit a home run, and it's like, oh, God, I don't even think this guy knows he's playing baseball. And I say, come on, throw that puck, you know, and they just, I'm going to hit that puck right out of the park. So there's no faith in Mark. There's no faith in Nels. So Nels gets on first. It's amazing. You know, he walks, and Edwards is, he's up. Edwards is like probably thinking that Nels is going to strike out too, which is why he's in the outhouse. And, you know, he comes running out. And Edwards walks. So we have somebody on first base, on second base. Doc hits, and all of a sudden, the bases are loaded, right? Did Doc hit? I don't remember. But I know bases are loaded, and who's going to be up when the bases are loaded? Who's the star? Who would you want to have coming up if bases are loaded on this show? Charles Ingles.
Yeah, but Charles Ingles.
Yeah, you have Charles Ingles. And what does Charles do? Charles saves the day. He hits a homer, and it turns into a big fight on the field. Like a real fight.
Yeah, like a flat-out brawl, which because, you know, hockey, I love the brawl.
Oh, my God, it's the best, yeah.
This is like total, like, pull the shirt over the head, gloves off, you're gone.
Yeah, and they're picking each other up and jumping into the tables of pies and bread and...
Oh, God, yeah.
There's a great beer barrel.
The beer barrel breaks open, and, of course, Isaiah gets a big, you know,
yeah,
drink from it, and, yeah, it's great.
No, and that's almost paying an homage to... didn't he do that in another scene? In another thing where there's a bottle of whiskey or something and it's pouring out and he drinks. Now, I might be thinking of Indiana Jones. All right. So
in The Untouchables with Kevin Costner.
Yes, I remember that.
There's a shootout and the accountant gets a drink.
Now, what a beautifully shot, wonderful period piece right there. The Untouchables with Kevin Costner. Wonderful. All right. So the merchants, whatever you want to call them, they win. But it's all this. Like, this is why I can't play these clips. It's this for like 5 minutes. So even when he hits...
And like, the women aren't trying to stop the fight. They're actually all of them cheering on their men, which is great. Like, they've just completely... They're like, no, they are so into it at this time. They're like, yeah!
Now, one thing I thought, I didn't think about until just now, really, is the other team doesn't seem to have wives there. And it would have been interesting to have the separation and maybe, like, even a little smack talk.
Well, yeah. I think the other team is, like, all the bachelors in Sleepy Eye. Like, it's not...
Yeah,
I think
you're right.
That's what they do. They're a bunch of guys who go around and they make their money by being a good ball team and challenging all these little towns and then winning on bets, right?
Like, I think not this time.
Not this time, but I think that's kind of like...
No.
It's weird, too, that they would do that because, you know, like, Sleepy Eye's got to be like Walnut Grove. It's got to be a bunch of farmers.
Now, very often, people who don't like baseball, like me, will go to a baseball game and they'll be lucky enough to actually get a good one. And all of a sudden, they're like, what? That was really fun. And that's what happened to Caroline. Caroline's in bed that night. Charles is reading something, and I cannot... It's the Home Mech. I can't figure out what
almanac?
It says.
Is it no, the, almanac?
The Home, and then M-E-D... I'll do a quick search. The copy I have is not HD, so I'll bust out the HD version and take a look. But so they're talking in bed, and... Caroline is a different Caroline here. She's been convinced that maybe next year could be fun. So here we go. Whoops. And no popcorn. Just want to say, this is before the days of popcorn.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, they just couldn't afford it. Yeah, they can't afford popcorn. Come on.
Charles, I must say that was a wonderful game.
Yeah, it was a good game to end with. That's the way you and the rest of the ladies feel. That'll be the last one.
Oh, I didn't hear anybody say that. In fact, Margaret suggested we sell tickets next year.
I think it would be a good way to earn money for the school fund.
Did you like the game that much?
Well, I didn't say that exactly. But it is for a good cause, and we'll get you outdoors, and no one could argue it's good, healthy exercise.
No. No one could argue with that. Good night, Carol.
Good night, Charles.
Even the music, it's so not typical.
Yeah. I like the way that Caroline has to justify fun with, like, well, it's good exercise and it's all right. Good. Like, she kind of, like, deep down, I think she just really enjoyed it. And even the brawl at the end was really fun, but she can't, you know, she's got to kind of, like.
Oh, she can't acknowledge that that was fun.
She has to do it in a way that's, you know, makes it okay in her mind.
If anything, I'm surprised they didn't throw a line in there kind of like for her. Basically saying, oh, I thought it was a very nice time, except when you acted like children.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Doing that in front of the girls. You know, that type of thing. Also, Charles, not one scratch on him.
Oh, no, of course not.
No. Come on. But, well, you know, I did like this episode. It's just with me in sports, we don't mesh very well. But I do appreciate you choosing this episode and getting together and reviewing it with me today. But if you could find Chantel very often on the Facebook group at Walnut Grove Cast. Do you have any final thoughts about this episode?
Yeah, I think, I think for me, and I just want to like say that how I ended up playing the sport at 43 years old is I was doing a corporate challenge with the company I was with at the time,
mm-hmm.
and they needed an extra female. And my boss was like, you're coming out to play. And I'm like, awesome, because I have no skill at all. And it was a bunch of people that had all played as young people, and they were giving me tips, and they were really, you know, they were nice to me in spite of my deficiencies as an athlete. And at one point I hit the ball and it was all over. When I hit the ball and actually got on base, that was it. I was hooked.
Really?
And so whenever I see an episode like this on any sort of like sitcom or anything.
You're all in. Like, you're like, I'm ready for the.
It feels like that moment.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh my God, how did I not start want to play this younger?
Right.
So that's really, I mean, that's what it really is for me. It's that fun and that excitement. And you know, I'm not playing this year just because of everything that's going on. Sure. And I'm really missing it. It's honestly like to go stand out in a field for a couple of hours. And I usually catch because I'm not great, right? But I try. You know, so episodes like this on any series always for me are just, they just tug at my heartstrings and mm-hmm. my, you know, that positive thing that I get.
And that's why they created the episode. I definitely think that for many people, probably more people than I'm even giving credit for, this will resonate very well with them. They get that same feeling that you're talking about. Whether you got it when you're 43 or whether you got it when you were 12 years old,
right?
It's that same feeling, that feeling of like, oh, this is fun and I feel like a kid and this is just fun. And that's all it is. Simple. And I think it resonates very well. And it definitely brings that across. And I don't know. I thought there's no harm in that. It just, for me, it doesn't. And it doesn't. But nonetheless, I thought it was a lot of fun to see like the characters interacting with each other in a different way.
Yeah, it's a great ensemble piece too for the cast, right? Like it's just a good, you get to see everybody kind of in this great sort of storyline and there's a lot of humor to it and there's a lot of, you know, great moments.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I'm kind of glad they didn't do is mix in kind of a sad sub story, you know?
Yeah.
Like the alcoholic who, you know, in the background.
This is just a fun not serious episode. This is just, and again, like, same thing. WKRP did the same thing at one point. I don't know how familiar you are with WKRP, but.
No, I'm familiar.
they did a baseball one where Les has challenged their rival, the big top 40 station, right? And of course, they all play like, it was the same thing. They all play super intense. And so WKRP goes out to play and And Les, who's the kid who never played sports, catches the ball and saves the game. And it's the same feeling. Like, it's right. just, you know. And I think for all the nerds out there, like me, it's that feeling.
And at some point, most sitcoms will have a baseball episode. It's kind of like...
Well, yeah, it's such a universal thing.
It's a rite of passage at some point. But yeah, I used to watch WKRP all the time. It's a great show, and I have to kind of go back. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Any support is appreciated.